From Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
Yeah, thanks very much, Ollie Barrett. Happy St. George's Day to the English listeners of the Richie Allen Show. I hope you celebrate your National Saints Day. Hope you've had a good day today. There were parades in Manchester and Birmingham and Nottingham and London yesterday, and they had the weather for it. I also hope you've had a fabulous bank holiday weekend. Did you? I certainly did. Thanks for asking. Good to be back with you. Your Richie Allen Show begins now.
Richie Allen.
Oh, yes.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
I'll be joined by the Scottish Socialist, the journalist, and former member of the Scottish Parliament, Tommy Sheridan, joins the programme from Glasgow in the second hour. I'm looking forward to catching up with Tommy. He's had some excellent articles in Sputnik News recently. Tommy in the second hour. Before that, there's been a lot going on geopolitically over the bank holiday weekend, so I've invited my friend Tony Gosling to join the programme, the host of the politics show on BCFM. Tony joins the programme this hour. We'll have a look at what's been going on in Sri Lanka, we'll talk about Northern Ireland, and we'll get through quite a bit in about 30-35 minutes this hour. It is Tuesday's Richie Allen Show. It is St. George's Day. Happy St. George's Day, April 23rd, 2019. My God! We've been having some good weather, huh? Huh? We've been having some weather. And what we did with our bank holiday weekend was we just took day trips. The old Beatles song ringing in our ears, Day Tripper. We took day trips to lovely parks. Lovely parks, Dunham, Massey, amongst them, and the deer and everything else. We had a lovely few days off. It's nice, it's important. And I didn't, until this morning, pay a blind bit of notice to the newspapers. I did, of course, know about Sri Lanka and one or two other things, but I turned a blind eye to it in the time that I was off. But I'm back with you now, and I've got a terrific week of guests lined up for you. Tommy Sheridan, Tony Gosling today, G. Edward Griffin tomorrow, Piers Corbyn tomorrow. Later in the week, Stephen Lendman. Got some amazing guests this week and even into next week. Yeah. So, you heard Ollie Barrett there. Sri Lanka has held a mass funeral, one of many to come. There's a day of mourning, several days of mourning for victims of the Easter Sunday blasts. They're saying it's over 320 people killed now, with about 500 wounded. And there is a state of emergency in place there. Today, it was announced that the Islamic State has claimed responsibility for the attack. However, there's been a bit of scepticism in terms of that claim. The Sri Lankan authorities are pretty sceptical about that. The government has blamed the attacks on a local Islamist group known as National Saeed Jamaat, that's NTJ. This morning on the BBC, they were alleging that maybe this particular group, NTJ, wanted to show off in some way to Islamic State, to show solidarity with them. The country's Prime Minister, though, does believe there might have been links to Islamic State. So there is a difference of opinion at the highest levels. And Tony Gosling has been following this really closely over the last few days, and we'll talk about it. So the government on the one hand, well, it's the local Islamist group. The Prime Minister, Ranil Wickremesinghe, is saying, well, it might be the Islamic State group. Dreadful thing, of course, horrendous. And we'll talk about that, as I said, with Tony. So the government here in the UK has sat down again with Labour to talk about Brexit and a way forward. Cabinet ministers are meeting with senior Labour figures to try and solve the impasse by finding a deal that could win the support of MPs. Some Tory MPs are very angry. They're very angry, including Nigel Evans, who's been very angry since the beginning of this process. He's called on Theresa May to step down as Prime Minister imminently, as soon as you possibly can, please. Here's Nigel Evans speaking to Sky News earlier.
We know that she announced a few months ago that she wouldn't fight the next general election. And then she announced that she wouldn't actually go beyond stage one. Well, we don't know when stage one is going to be achieved, because the date of Brexit kept being moved. It was going to be March the 29th. Then it got moved to April the 12th. And then the Prime Minister came to the House of Commons and said she could not countenance it going beyond June the 30th. And then she came back from Brussels and said, oh, by the way, it's October the 31st. And that could even be extended even further. OK, we can't carry on going on like this. There has to be some sort of termination to this. We have to deliver what the people voted for.
Mm. As the 1922 committee meets at 6 p.m. today, can they get rid of her? Theresa May is one of those people that no matter what situation you put them in, they look ridiculous. There were photographs over the weekend appearing on social media, weren't there, of her marshalling a road run. And she looked stupid. Maybe all politicians look stupid in social situations. So Change UK has launched its campaign for the EU parliamentary elections. Right? Hot on the heels of Nigel Farage's Brexit party, Change UK, which wants to remain in the European Union, has announced its campaign, launched its campaign, with 70 candidates, including Rachel Johnson, the journalist, and the sister of Boris Johnson. Yes. The party, previously known as the Independent Group, is made up of 11 MPs who quit Labour and the Conservatives. They're preparing for the European election as the latest Brexit delay means the UK is probably going to take part. It's dreadful, isn't it? Johnson, that is Rachel Johnson, says, I'm sure that Boris understands why this is not a vote against Boris. I'm sure Boris doesn't give a shit, love. This is a vote for change, she says. We need to move the dial. People need to have a say. Here's Change UK interim leader, a woman called Heidi Allen.
These elections are a chance to send the clearest possible message. We demand a people's vote and the right to remain and campaign to remain in the European Union. We will fight for the change that this country needs based on evidence, not ideology. So that's the evidence to tackle climate change, the evidence to tackle poverty and social injustice, and the evidence to tackle those healthcare challenges. And right now, a Brexit deal carved up just to keep the two main parties intact, that's not good enough either. And we'll do everything in our power to ensure that the United Kingdom has a better choice for the future.
Yeah, it's over. I'm not going to do any more Brexit today. There might be a bit more in the week. You're fed up of it. And we've had a break and you're fed up of it. Sky News is playing a daily game of, it's a daily game on Sky called Start a Row with a Snowflake from Extinction Rebellion. 'Twas Kay Burley's turn today, go on Kay. The latest lamb to the slaughter was a young woman called Dazzy Agaji, who knows feck all about anything. If Dazzy even knew that she knew feck all, that'd be something. Dazzy says we want to ruin the economy. This is Extinction Rebellion. And Kay doesn't pick up on it. Kay is mad. Kay is more annoyed at the blocking of cycle paths and halting electric trains. This is Dazzy Agaji, the latest Extinction Rebellion middle class silver spoon stuck right up your arse person to go on the national media to patronise the nation. Here she is speaking with Kay. Kay doesn't pick up on this ruin the economy bit, which kind of disappointed me.
The reason why we do this is because it actually causes economic pause. So the only way we've realised the government will listen to us is if we actually start to ruin the economy.
Ruin the economy, you little bastard. That's what I would have said if I was Kay, of course.
It's really sad that money talks so loudly. That
easy for a middle-class private school educated wit to say, isn't it? Isn't it? Easy to say when you've got loads of money.
That's the only way we'll actually be listened to. So that's why we've taken these disruptive actions.
OK, but what? How does blocking a cycle path or climbing on top of an electric train help do that?
Yeah, you should have hammered her on the we want to ruin the economy, Kay. But anyway, yes, what about stopping cyclists and jumping on electric trains? That seems to be counterproductive when you want people to believe that we're all going to die if we don't stop putting carbon into the environment and into the atmosphere and all of that.
For example, the blockades that we did, I think it was the Evening Standard that basically said that we'd caused £12 million loss in a couple days to the West End. So it's through that that we've actually gotten our voices heard.
Yeah, we've gotten our voices heard because we caused £12 million worth of damage to London retailers. But my daddy wasn't affected. No, daddy's got all his money buried in Switzerland and in Gibraltar, Kay. Fuck the little guy. Seems to be the attitude.
It's heard, and it's through that that we've basically told people, you can come, you can hear about it, you can listen to it. We've got loads of people's assemblies currently going on where they can actually come in and be a part of it.
And why are you not working when you're blocking cycle paths and annoying people and gluing yourselves to windows? You're not working because daddy is subsidising you, isn't he? Isn't he, you little snowflake? And you would call yourself a feminist, wouldn't you? And daddy is paying for this excursion into London, causing people to lose millions and millions of pounds, possibly causing people to lose their jobs.
The change.
Why do you want people not to cycle to work?
Good question.
I didn't say that.
It's not funny. It's really not funny.
It's not funny.
Not funny. Why do you think that the cycle paths were blocked then? Why did you stop electric trains operating?
You can actually cycle through, as I've already said. You can cycle through.
Why did you climb on top of, not you personally, why did you climb on top of an electric train and stop that operating?
I feel like it was for the government to actually understand we're very serious about our cause. And through that, that's why we had to take drastic actions.
But an electric train doesn't impact on the environment like a diesel car, so why not?
I feel like it was more of a symbolic action.
A symbolic action in what way? Telling people that they shouldn't use an electric train?
Clearly not.
So it's not funny. It's really not funny. Please try not to laugh because it's not funny.
Don't laugh. You're really getting under Kay's. You're really getting up Kay's nose. Don't laugh.
What was to be achieved by stopping people using electric vehicles?
Would you allow me to talk?
Go on.
Thank you. Through this, I said it's a symbolic action because it's shown the government how serious we are.
Yeah, how serious. Sloganeering it is. Talked about this last week, didn't I? They don't have anything to say because narcissistic, middle class, private school educated, daddy pays for everything, doesn't have any idea about carbon emissions, doesn't have any idea about climate and the things that affect climate, the things that change climate, hasn't a clue. And they get away with murder when they go on Sky News and the BBC because Kay Burley gets annoyed, Adam Bolton gets annoyed and misses the point. It's very easy to unmask these people as being the know-nothings that they are just by asking them a few questions about the science of it all. But they choose not to. Why does Kay choose not to? That's a good question. Brendan O'Neill is the journalist with Spiked Online. He was on Sky News again last night with the journalist Yasmin Alibe Brown. Brendan O'Neill is not happy, and he's been roundly criticised today for his comments.
I just think these people come off like a millenarian cult.
Yes, a millenarian cult.
All they talk about is the end of the world, the hellfire that is going to consume the earth.
Well, that's exactly what they're talking about.
Our eco-sins that we will be punished for.
Yeah, you can be blind and deaf. It's their future.
Hold on, let me finish. This is a very religious-sounding movement. And you know what I find really amazing? When Jon Snow from Channel 4 News went to the Brexit protest, the pro-Brexit protest, remember he said so many white people, I was at an Extinction Rebellion protest in London yesterday, they were all white. And no one said that because these are seen as good, nice, middle-class white people and therefore they don't have to be racialised in the way that the working-class Brexit protesters were.
But what we have here... You are so mad now.
This is basically a
Bourge... Can you talk about what they're doing?
This is a bourgeois...
No, you're not talking about what they're doing.
This is a bourgeois screech of rage against progress, against industrialisation and against ordinary people who have the temerity to eat meat and fly around the world and have a nice life. This is upper-middle-class people moaning about how people live. That's what it is. Most radical
libertarianism.
Protests...
May I speak now?
Most radical protests...
No, you can't
hug it. Don't
you
shout in my face.
No,
most radical protests I take aim at the government. This protest is a protest against the people.
No, it That's isn't. It
view.
Is against governments around the world. Around the world.
It really is.
And people like me and you. And you're no lumberjack. You're a middle-class man. You're a middle-class man. Posh, rich, influential.
I'm not rich,
so stop
I'm not
going
posh.
On about middle class.
Stop
people.
Lying about
okay?
Me.
So if we don't take it seriously, we are imperiling their future. If you don't see that, I really do feel very sorry for you, Brendan.
Well, she feels sorry for Brendan. Yasmin Alibe-Brown there and Brendan O'Neill from Spiked Online. Tony Gosling will join the programme live in a couple of minutes. Tommy standing by, Tommy Sheridan later on from Glasgow. Great guests all this week on your Richie Allen Show. Are you ready for the charts? Are you ready for the charts? The virtue signalling chart of the day. It's been a while since I did this, isn't it? But it's back today, be Jesus. Only time to do today's top four, by the way. I can only fit four in, but they are four good ones. Are you ready for the charts? Oh yes, the top four virtue signalling Muppets of the day. And we're beginning with number four. And number four, you've heard a bit of her already, it's Dazzy Agagi. She's helping to ruin the economy, stopping cyclists and electric trains. But she's doing it for us, and she's doing it for her mum. Number four, Dazzy Agagi.
We do care about this earth. We care about everyone. I'm doing this for myself.
Yes.
I'm doing this for my future. I'm doing this for my brothers.
You go, girl.
I'm doing this for my mum. I'm doing this for you as well, to make sure that we don't actually end up using this time that we have, that we could create change, and then going past this time and realising it's too late to go back.
She's fucking destroying the economy in London for me, you, and her mum. Dazzy Agagi at number four. At number three, the man, the one, the only top virtue signalling recording artist of all time, it's Hall of Famer Owen Jones. Donald Trump is coming back to the UK, you heard this today. Owen Jones is having kittens as the hairpiece is getting a state visit. Cue the virtue, bucket loads of virtue. At number three, it's Owen Jones.
When Donald Trump leaves the Paris Agreement on climate change as the biggest polluter in history, which is what the US is, that affects all of us. When he incites hatred against Muslims, that affects all of us. When he retweets Britain First, a British fascist organisation, and he whips up hatred against Muslims, that affects all of us. When he uses his bully platform to whip up hatred against trans people, and he's pushed through a ban on them serving in the US military, that affects trans people in this country. It's about standing in solidarity with Muslims, with trans people, with refugees and migrants. It's about what Donald Trump represents. It's Trumpism, if you like, that we're marching against.
You march, boy. You go, boy. Owen Jones at number three. We've not heard the last of Owen Jones. At number two, it was his young apprentice, the financial journalist Kate Andrews. She wasn't about to be outdone. This is from the same conversation on Trump's state visit. Number two, Kate Andrews.
If we take our personal opinions out of this and just look factually at what he has done, he has mocked disabled journalists, he has insulted and made derogatory comments about women's looks.
Women.
He has branded large minority groups as horrific things I don't really want to repeat on air. Very recently, just a few weeks ago, he was mocking asylum seekers. And in this international world, actually, I mean, back at home where I'm from in America, here in the UK and on the broader global scene, we've had to deal with the repercussions of this, and we've had to learn how to operate in this world. And I think protesting Donald Trump, if you feel compelled to do so when he comes here, is the democratic, peaceful, and right thing to do for those who want to stand up against many of those comments that he's made.
We are all so very good and Donald is so very bad. Good effort, girl. But Owen Jones looked at you across the studio and smirked, and he went straight to number one. Today's number one, take it away. Owen Jones believes the Americans are crying out for him. Owen Jones at number one.
Americans are crying out every time we do these protests. They're saying, we wish we were standing with you. We want you to protest. And the kind of, you know, the impact of so many people, diverse, multicultural people, Muslim, non-Muslim, women, men, people LGBTQ and straight, marching together
straight
in the closest
people.
Ally of the United States has a big impact. But we are saying that if Donald Trump uses the bully pulpit of the US presidency, the most powerful man on earth, to whip up hatred against Muslims, against LGBTQ people, against refugees, against migrants, against women with his track record of misogyny, then we will come out in great numbers to say that we oppose his anti-climate change policies, his pro-war policies, his anti-refugee policies.
Get in there,
his
son.
Pro-elite policies. Let's be honest. A lot of the things I'm talking about there, they're not American, just American phenomena. They're happening in this country as well.
They're English,
too. The election
too.
Of Donald Trump emboldened every racist on the face of the earth. But we're saying, we're fighting back.
We're fighting back. Vulnerable groups, do not worry. Donald Trump hates you, but Owen Jones loves you. Yeah.
It's time to play the music. It's time to light the light.
Muppets, every one of them. Owen Jones, Kate Andrews and all the rest of it. Welcome to the Richie Allen Show. If you're just joining me, April 23rd, 2019. Happy St. George's Day. Let's get our first guest on the line. Lots to talk about with him. He is the host of the BCFM Politics Show every Friday on BCFM. Former BBC journalist as well. Top man. And lots to get into today. I want to just mention the biggest story, I suppose, of the day before we say hello to him, and that is that there seems to be a difference of opinion with respect to what or who was behind the bombings in Sri Lanka on Sunday. First mass funeral took place today of many, a day of mourning for the victims of the blasts in Sri Lanka, over 320 people killed, 500 wounded as well, and a state of emergency is in effect right now to prevent further attacks. The Prime Minister of the country seems to think there might have been some link to Islamic State. The government itself thinks it's more likely the local Islamist group National Tawhid Jamaat, that's NTJ. Right. It's funny when I call Tony sometimes there are one or two problems. Isn't that, it's generally Tony, isn't it? I don't know whether he's playing hard to get here. But I'm not finding it easy to connect to him at the moment. That's okay, it's not the end of the world. I can always take a tune. I'll give him a second there just to log on while I line up a tune. But I've had problems connecting to him before. I don't know what that is. Yes. I know there are conspiracy theorists amongst us who will say, well, there are dark forces working. There aren't dark forces working. Well, there are, but they're not working against me. I have no idea why he can't answer me. He is there. He just said hello to me. What's going on? I don't know. It's not funny. But we'll find out and we'll get on top of it and we'll get him on. We'll iron out the gremlins in the system. This is Europe's most listened to independent radio show, your Richie Allen Show, back and live after the bank holiday weekend. I'm in good form. Hope you are too. This is Simple Minds. Tony Gosling next. Thanks for joining me. There he is now. I don't know what it is with you, whether you play hard to get or whatever it is, but sometimes there's a connection issue. Anyway, we're live. I've given you the big intro. Tony, thanks for joining us today, mate. It's been a busy old weekend. You've been off for a bit because your show would have aired on Good Friday, so you're not back till Friday on the BCFM Politics Show. Let me just ask you this question straight off the bat. Horrendous attack in Sri Lanka on Easter Sunday, well in excess of 300 people dead, 500 wounded. There appears to be a difference of opinion between the Prime Minister of the country, Ranil Wickremesinghe, excuse me, Ranil Wickremesinghe, who says there may be links to Islamic State, but his own government are saying maybe not, maybe it's the local Islamist group, NTJ. This comes hot on, I hate to use cliches, but very soon after what happened in New Zealand, a terrible event there. How are you reading this, Tony? What's happening?
Well, it's even sooner after the fire at Notre Dame, of course. I mean, it's been a horrendous Easter. But, okay, so 321 so far dead in Sri Lanka, 45 of which are children. Now, this isn't mentioned very much in the mainstream media at all because, of course, they're immediately questions are raised about what can possibly be achieved by any terror group killing children. What we saw with the idea of just killing young people was kind of introduced really with Anders Breivik in Norway murdering a lot of very young sort of socialist left-wing people. The idea that killing young people is somehow going to get you any kind of sympathy or further any cause is obviously ridiculous. The claim that this is somehow connected with Christchurch, well, the AMAC news agency, which is where these so-called ISIS claims come from, by the way, with no evidence whatsoever, ISIS 2 days after just say, oh, yeah, we did it. And I've heard, by the way, apparently genuine ISIS commanders in Syria saying we have nothing to do with AMAC news agency. I remember hearing that on the BBC about 5 years ago, where they were saying they disclaim anything to do with AMAC. And yet we still hear when AMAC announces something, literally just a few words pop up on an anonymous website that suddenly IS is claiming responsibility. So we need to be extremely careful about, saying, yes, is the Islamic State is behind this. And, of course, we all know that there are a lot of very powerful forces behind the Islamic State, including the UAE and Saudi Arabia and NATO, potentially, too. Scott Bennett has exposed the financing of IS through Swiss banks like UBS by the West. So, you know, these sorts of claims need to be taken really with a pinch of salt. But with 321 dead, 45 children, we need to start using the sort of words that would be used in church on Easter Sunday, like evil. Those words should be used on attacks like this. I've also seen experts mentioning and making absolutely clear that there is nothing to be gained politically from these kinds of attacks. And therefore, it's very unlikely that this group over in Sri Lanka could have actually managed it. Previous attacks that they've been basically doing a bit of graffiti on Buddhist shrines, and suddenly they're doing all these sort of terror attacks. So that's just a very quick, I would say, suggestion about, you know, there is one thing definite is if these guys this little terror group over in Sri Lanka have got anything to do with this, which, to be honest, I doubt, actually, then they would have needed outside help. I just heard on the news them saying they had to have help from an international terror network. Well, that international terror network may be Al-Qaeda, it may be IS. That, to me, means Western intelligence services gave them some help. And particularly when we have no evidence whatsoever, ISIS not giving any evidence to say that it was actually us.
If it was, then.
Like Rita Katz, Pamela Geller, and the site intelligence agency, literally immediately after the attacks, saying that this was the Islamic State on their own websites. Now, Rita Katz is a former Mossad agent, or a former Israeli intelligence agent, and when somebody like this comes out with evidence so fast, which apparently it shows that they know a hell of a lot about these attacks, then either you've got two possibilities. Either the Israeli intelligence services are the best in the world, which some people say they are, or they are the perpetrators of the attacks, and that's why they know so much about them. So we need to be, I think, really careful about just pointing the finger at Islamists and say, of course, yes, this is just retribution for Christchurch.
If nobody's got anything to gain, let's just say that, for the sake of argument, let's say that it is the Western intelligence agency-backed Islamic State, whom we're told, we are told, have been decimated to the point of near extinction in Syria. Let's just pretend it's them. Let's just pretend it is some jihadists backed by Western intelligence agencies. You touched on something very important. Churches in Sri Lanka on Easter Sunday morning. What could possibly be the payoff there? What would there be to gain in doing that? Apart from spreading just random terror amongst people and amongst Christians in that region, why would anybody want to do that?
Okay, so let's compare this with Christchurch, for example. I think the real agenda here is dragging Sri Lanka into the global war on terror. In Christchurch, it seemed pretty obvious to me. What you've got there is you've got a country which is very peripheral to all of this, although it's supposed to be part of the Western Five Eyes intelligence services. New Zealand really wants nothing to do with the war on terror. Many of the senior officials in New Zealand don't believe in it, don't believe the narrative that we're fed by the mainstream press over here, and they want to stay as far away from it as possible. But a big terror attack like that, what that starts to do is it forces them to get involved. And this, I think, is the same sort of thing going on here in Sri Lanka. With a wider evil agenda, I'm also looking at the ramping up of tension between the Israelis and the Iranians and thinking, well, actually, what seems to be being perpetrated here is some kind of attempt to get interfaith warfare going in different countries around the world, and home front in New Zealand, possibly in European countries, that sort of thing, getting people whipped up with some kind of fake attacks by Islamists. Oh, gosh, someone's got to do something about this. And I think maybe that's potentially one of the reasons that this has happened where it has. But quite clearly, this was an indiscriminate attack on Christians, which is supposedly by a group which doesn't even generally seem to attack Christians. I mean, we've just got to wonder what on earth is the motive. I think probably there is no real motive there, and that the real motive is somewhere else. The real motive is just hardening the sides, as they call it, which is getting public opinion against Islamists, but also managing to try and whip up hatred between different faith groups, which I think is the old divide and rule tactic, which we saw, you know, used such a lot in Northern Ireland. The National Throw Fake Jamaat Network is certainly not capable of this. All the experts say that. So the question is, who is helping them? And if it's intelligence, Western intelligence services, and if it's ISIS, I think that's probably going to be the same people giving them the bombs. This whole thing about suicide bombings as well, I'd like to say something briefly about that, because I wrote an article way back in February 2007, to over 12 years ago, for the National Union of Journalists magazine, which was published in their magazine, which talked about suicide bombings and the way that this is a very pernicious use of this term when it comes to terror attacks, to demonise whoever is blamed for the attacks. And I use the expression, this is a propaganda narrative of which Joseph Goebbels himself would be proud, right? And the reason I say that is because, generally speaking, there is no actual evidence of proof, because there's been no court case or nothing that's been proven in court with these attacks in Sri Lanka yet. But the media is parroting this again and again and again. For a start, on a soft target, any soft target that's not a military target, you have absolutely no need to have a suicide bomber. What can happen is someone will come in with a backpack or a box that looks like maybe a catering box or something, leave it there, walk out and detonate their bomb. This is absolutely unconvincing that to me that somebody would give their life away for a bomb attack on a soft target. Completely unnecessary. And if you're talking about something like the Beirut barracks bombing back in the 1980s, you know, where you've got two guys who drove right into the middle of the U.S. barracks in Lebanon and killed something like 250 soldiers, yes. A suicide bomber is necessary for that sort of operation. And by the way, that wasn't a terrorist attack. It was a military operation against the American occupying army in Lebanon. So there's no need for a suicide bomber on a soft target. Absolutely pointless. The other thing is, these backpack bombs can very simply be given to somebody who thinks there may be drugs and detonated remotely. And finally, the one that nobody ever seems to think about is that nowadays we have drones with Hellfire missiles. We have high-altitude flying aircraft with Hellfire missiles who can fire a missile, and that then causes an explosion. Nobody knows where the explosion comes from, but the local police are primed maybe to say, well, this is a suicide bomber, and that just gets repeated all the way around the world. That exact thing happened in Iraq several times, where a helicopter had fired a missile, and the story got out around the world, oh, it's a suicide bomber, and the local people said, no, it wasn't, it was fired from a helicopter. So these are the sorts of questions that journalists need to ask, but none of them are asked.
No, they used to do. Well, they used to ask those questions on commercial and national media, but they don't ask them anymore. I'm very interested in what you've had to say there about that. It definitely intrigues me. Religious wars to harden people, to harden more Christians in the West against Muslims in preparation for movement against Iran. Maybe I'm not. You didn't say that. I'm thinking that problem, reaction, solution. We've seen it before. Tony Gosling is our guest this hour. To the top of the hour, folks. Follow Tony on Twitter. If you haven't heard him on BCFM, I know many of our listeners have. Check out the Politics Show every Friday on BCFM. Nothing like it in this country. There isn't. Believe you me. Now, let's talk about Northern Ireland. It doesn't often come up in this programme, which is interesting because I've always been an Irish Republican, by peaceful means Irish Republican, but an Irish Republican. And I've been following the story over the last couple of days of the young woman, Lyra McKee, who was killed in Derry on the Creggan estate there, a 29-year-old woman. Shot in the head. The new IRA, apparently, according to Irish News, has claimed responsibility for this. Again, I mean, it's a dreadful thing. It's a horrendous thing. And I don't support any dissident groups. I don't support violence, full stop, no matter where it comes from. You've been looking at this, and we're getting from the BBC there was a riot, and it was in Derry. There was rioting, dissident Republicans, and some arsehole fired at people or in the general direction of people and killed this young woman who does not deserve it, should not be dead. It's a disgraceful thing. That's what they're saying. But there are other stories emerging, and we don't mean from dissident Republicans, but there are other observers there saying that how the riots came to be is not how we're being told it by the BBC. The rioting itself is of great interest, Tony.
Well, it caused this woman's death, the rioting, but we haven't been stepping back from what caused the rioting in the first place, really. And that was clearly, it was the Chief Constable, PSNI, the Detective Superintendent or Superintendent in Derry, that decided to do this fishing operation. And Lyra McKee was caught up in reporting on the reaction to the fishing operation. Now, as far as I know, they didn't find anything, the police, but what they were doing was going around Republican homes, banging on doors, possibly smashing doors down when they were told to go away by the residents, looking for explosives and guns, which they didn't find any of. And this was what caused the rioting. People started coming out of their homes all around the area saying, you're not going to be smashing your way into our homes. We're not going back to the bad old days. And then all of a sudden, Lyra is shot dead in the head. Now, this is a very peculiar thing to happen. It doesn't seem to me random. We're told it was done by a pistol. I would suggest it was almost certainly deliberate and done with a rifle. So I think that needs to be looked in by somebody, obviously not the PSNI, because they are implicated in causing this riot in the first place by their sectarian attempts to... I mean, this is a provocation. Going round houses of one political group and smashing your way in or going searching homes. This is the sort of thing we see the Israelis doing to the Palestinians and the sort of thing we saw during the Troubles. But it shouldn't be happening if there's any kind of real law and order in Northern Ireland.
Hang on, let me jump in. I've got it. I have to jump in there, and you know this. You would jump in as well. Let me jump in.
Go for it, yeah.
What about the PSNI saying, well, hang on a second, if we get intelligence that there are firearms or explosives being hidden in certain houses, we must follow up on that intelligence. We know that people are not going to just open the doors and say, oh, Constable, please come on in here. They're going to say to the PS tonight, we're doing our bloody job. And they will say, Tony Gosling, when we get information that there are explosives and firearms in the houses of known loyalist agitators, we would go and do the same thing there. They might say that to you right now.
Good point. Good question. But they were wrong, weren't they? There were no guns. There were no explosives in these homes. Where did this intelligence come from? Was it from Rita Katz and the Site Intelligence Agency? Somewhere, mysterious, somebody somewhere decided to feed them fake intelligence. So those people who were responsible for those riots should now have resigned. They should be going onto the television and they should say, right, well, we caused that riot and we caused that woman's death, so we're going to resign. We're going to be honourable police. We're going to let somebody who's more competent take over. But, of course, they're not doing that. We've got DS Jason Murphy, who's probably one of the people who was involved in Derry with the decision to have these fishing operations, now leading the investigation into who's done it. So he's kind of been given a platform, really, to say exactly what he wants to. I don't like this kind of thing where the police are considered always to be in the right. They're clearly not in the right in this particular case.
Let me ask you a quick question. Sorry, Tony. Yep. What should the police do about these dissident loyalist and Republican factions who don't seem to have the support of the wider nationalist or the wider loyalist community? So you've got these splinter groups, the new IRA, the real IRA, you've got these loyalist factions that are still active as well. When they hear that these people are doing stuff and they're moving weapons, what in the name of Jesus are the police supposed to do in that instance?
Well, okay, number one is you've got to catch them red-handed if you're going to take them to court. I think we all know that, don't we? If you're going to do a raid and you have actually only got flimsy intelligence, you shouldn't be doing the raid. You need to have good enough intelligence, that is to say human intelligence, possibly surveillance intelligence, that sort of thing, that when you swoop, you get the criminals, you get the evidence. And they haven't here. And they haven't stopped when they went into someone's house and didn't find anything, they then started going to more and more houses trying to find
stuff. Well, they were desperate,
this is sectarian policing and the sort of stuff that we need to make sure never happens anywhere, particularly as we know it's a powder keg in Northern Ireland. But it's a provocation. I think those raids were a provocation, Richie, the same sort of provocation that we saw back in the 1970s that actually kicked off the troubles in the first place. And that's why I think those guys need to resign. They need to resign now.
Here's a question, though. Here's another question. They have admitted killing Lyra McKee. So, Tony, by admitting that they murdered this young woman, they've admitted this now. Let's put our conspiracy theories to one side. They've admitted this.
Yeah.
By admitting it, they've negated any criticism of the conduct of the PSNI whatsoever. They shot a woman in the head who's there to observe. How can anybody, I'm not saying you are, you would never justify anything like that, but surely that supersedes or overrides what the police did. That's disgraceful. They've admitted it.
Up on some website now, is it? Who is the new IRA? Who has created this organisation? Who has steered it? Is it been steered by intelligence services, as we now know, through collusion in Northern Ireland during the Troubles, that MI5 were deeply involved, that Army Intelligence were deeply involved in steering these organisations? And we know, and we've just heard all this stuff from Sri Lanka about the potential for having interreligious warfare being perpetrated, deliberately perpetrated. I think if we're going to be asking questions about the new IRA and them being behind this, we can ask exactly the same questions as we've heard about Rita Katz and about the IS claiming this attack over in Ceylon or Sri Lanka. We need to say who is now steering these organisations and these groups and who stands to benefit from it. I mean, remember, we've got a situation in Northern Ireland now where for a couple of years where there's been no government, no proper representative government going on. Stormont should be open, and it should have been opened right the way through the Brexit process so that the people of Northern Ireland have got a chance to contribute to that.
Yeah.
But this is all part, I think, of the close down of any kind of real proper political debate in Northern Ireland. And in fact, what's happened, of course, in the UK is a similar kind of close down where the offices of Theresa May have simply decided we're not going to have a Brexit. They're doing everything they can to stop it. And they're clinging on for grim death to this old kind of gravy train oligarchy of the Brussels EU. So there's not really any democracy in Northern Ireland. I think it would be very, very interesting to see the debate that would happen in Stormont on the backstop and this kind of thing. If they reopened and reintroduced democracy,
that's a brilliant point, and I take it on board. Let me put this to you: you know, some of my friends listening to this won't believe their ears because I'm supposed to be saying most of what you're saying, but I'm not because I'm fair, right? So you've opened up the possibility that who the hell are these Shardish dissident groups and who's really running them? That's an excellent question.
Yeah.
And it's the sort of question I would have been asking before. However, there's a big but. There is a big but in the room. And the big but is this particular group, my friend, my great friend, this particular group has a political wing called SAORA. That's S-A-O-R-A-D-H, right? It basically means freedom, right? So they're there. They marched in Dublin over the weekend, much to the disgust of Irish men and women in Dublin on social media. So that kind of gives, you know, that kind of, I don't know, sticks a few pins in the theory that they're not really a Republican dissident group, but they might be run by the deep state. There is a political wing. We can see who these people are. What do you say to that?
Okay, yeah, well, all I say is that the armed wing, the loyalists and the Republicans during the Troubles, Army Intelligence and MI5 were all over them. They allowed the political wings to get on pretty much with their own business, although, of course, there was a bit of interference in that too. But I think it's pretty clear that the intelligence services, whether they are the individual military services such as the Air Force, the Army, obviously the Army were the biggest one in Northern Ireland, or the Domestic Intelligence Service, MI5. There may even be things like Cabinet Office, little spin-offs from those, MI6, spin-offs from that as well. They take a great deal of interest in these kinds of political movements, particularly when they're involved in the possibility of splitting Northern Ireland away from Great Britain and rejoining the Irish Republic. That is the process that they want to control, that sort of thing. So it doesn't, I'm afraid I don't buy this thing that, well, because there's a political wing which is open and more public, that the armed wing is not being manipulated and controlled. This is, they spend vast amounts of money. You know, they've got, isn't it something like 4,000 officers at MI5? And yeah, this is obviously one of their main things, that they will be looking to control dissident Republicans, and they'll be looking to control dissident loyalists.
Of course, yeah.
They like to have pieces on both sides of the chessboard. That's what they do.
Good stuff. By the way, Saer is the Irish word for free. Saerach is the way it's pronounced, is freedom. That's the group. It's a good point you're making there. It's definitely... It's a question a lot of people are asking on Twitter today and over the last couple of days as well. Why would anybody do that? Why would anybody connect it with that group? Why would they want to kill a journalist or anybody like that? It would, you know, come back to haunt them, you know.
The thing that convinces me that it's dodgy, Richie, is simply the lack of any kind of accountability.
No question.
For the police starting these riots in the first place. I think that's the main point to make. I mean, the other stuff is peripheral in a way, because we have no way of knowing who's working for who within these various dissident groups. But the fact that the senior police that caused these riots in the first place have not resigned is a great telltale sign, because they should have resigned straight away.
Tony Gosling is our guest till the top of the hour. What do you make of... look, I've gotten a bit of stick for this already, because I am a bit childish about it. But the middle class, upper class, private school educated, jolly up kids whose daddies are paying for their excursions around London, taking over the city, causing disruption to travel, causing a big problem in the city in terms of retailers losing millions and millions of pounds, this Extinction Rebellion group. What have you made of this, Tony? What have you made of police officers in London dancing around with them and skateboarding with them, when some of our listeners and some supporters of the politics show on BCFM have been telling me today the miners got their heads kicked in? Even pro-hunting people. Now, you and I are against hunting for sport, hunting animals. It's disgusting. But the countryside people, when the Countryside Alliance marched into London, they got their heads caved in. But not these kids. What's going on, Tony?
Well, I'm not sure. I think the Countryside Alliance actually did get a fairly easy ride of it, because they were, you know, very, very well connected in with the establishment. But look, if anyone was really serious, and I don't think the Extinction Rebellion people are, about climate change, then there's a very simple solution in London, which Ken Livingstone brought in when I was living in London in the early 1980s, which would brilliantly and very, very quickly reduce the dependence on cars. We've just had the ULEZ charge introduced for everyone every single day. And even if you just drive into London very briefly in the middle of the night and come out again, you still have to pay £12.50 now. It's the ULEZ charge, some sort of emission charge. I'm not even sure what it stands for. And it was introduced last week. But Ken Livingstone, when he was mayor of London, he started to introduce a ratepayer subsidy to public transport. Now, that meant that he was able to reduce the fares on the buses and the tube.
Good man.
Pretty much straight away in 1981. Now, the first year he did that, where he brought the fares down by a third. Now, stand by for this, Richie. There were 6,000 less serious accidents on the road.
Wow.
Okay? There was a drop in something like a quarter of car journeys. And he was heading towards, by 1984, he believed he could get all public transport in London free. Now, the downside of that, of course, is it means less people employed on the tubes to check tickets and things like that. But it was going to completely do what the Sadiq Khan says he wants to do with this emission charge. That is to say, people would leave their cars at home. They would travel almost all the time by public transport. It would mean a massive new investment in more buses, more tubes, more tube lines, and loads of money for it coming in from the ratepayers. And so that is what should be happening in London. It's happened in other cities around the world. I believe Luxembourg, Seattle, several cities have come down to zero public transport charges. And London under Ken Livingstone was basically, the GLC was abolished. They stopped him doing it. Sadiq Khan has brought in this incredible tax, which it actually penalises poor people. He says he's Labour. He's not. He's just a robot controlled of the New World Order, if you want to call it that.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
he's
yeah.
basically putting taxes. Taxes on poor people, can you believe? So if you have to kind of, this is a, it's just a help to sell new car scheme that he's introduced. Buy a £20,000 car, a brand new one, and you don't have to pay this charge. But if you've got a 5-year-old diesel or a 10-year-old petrol car, you have to pay the £12.50. Unbelievable, really, how people have been duped here when we could have had a scheme which Ken introduced in the 80s, which would end up with very few cars on the road, virtually no pollution, and amazingly to see the Extinction Rebellion people actually trying to picket the train.
Morons. And a cyclist. Do you know who else did what? You see, I've got a few socialist friends, and they're not social democrats now, they're genuine socialists. And one of my great socialist friends, Michael Cohen, who's around the corner from me, Michael, he told me that David Blunkett did the same thing when he was at Sheffield, when he was a Sheffield councillor many years ago. He stopped all
that. Yeah, he tried to, yeah.
And nearly did, and failed because, again, he ran up against the same problems.
I think he brought the fares down to something like 3 pence.
Yeah, that's it, that's
they
it, that's it.
Him, you know?
Listen, I'm not in favour of all the cars coming off the road because I want us to have that bit of freedom from the state. But at the same time, these initiatives you described there, the Livingston one and what Blunkett was trying to do, they're brilliant. But I'm so glad you brought up Khan. He's vile, Khan, isn't he? He's sick. I mean, you can tell by looking at him, he's sick, Sadiq Khan, you know.
Well, he's running basically a gangster racketeering
yeah.
shop with taxing poor people, and yet he's supposed to be working for the Labour Party. How he can stand up in public, you know, he's just talking about, oh, we've got to find somewhere of stopping pollution. Well, why don't you have a word with Ken, eh, Sadiq? Or else you're just going to tax poor people. That's exactly why they elected you, isn't it? And it just shows how far away we are from any kind of democracy in London.
Or anywhere else. Now, on that, I'm not letting you away with the question I asked earlier on. I'm not letting you away with it. You didn't answer it. What do we do? Do we tell these kids to get the feck home? And if they don't, we bulldoze them off the streets. What do we do? I'm all for getting water cannons and just blasting them off the roads. You know, the older you get, the more right-wing you become. That's what they tell me anyway.
No, I don't agree with that. No, I think
I don't mean that either.
An absolute right to protest. And I think, in a way, the police can see, many of the police looking at this, that things are getting out of control with the number of cars on the roads. Now, I wouldn't say the solution that the XR people are coming up with is the best one. In fact, to a large extent, what they're saying is, look, we don't know really what to do, but we want our politicians to do something. Now, of course, the problem with that is if they haven't got any real analysis, is that some lobby takes over, like the ULEZ, the emission charge lobby, which will really only benefit the racketeers and companies like Capita, who will run that sort of service. And so they leave a big gap in policy, which is usually filled by some racket or other racket. So
yeah. They
need to be. I mean, the other thing which was absolutely ridiculous was picketing Jeremy Corbyn.
Oh, what do you? Yeah,
he's been pushing for some reduction in the number of cars in London. And so, what on earth are they doing? Picketing his house. It just seems they haven't actually thought through what they're doing and they're kind of blundering around. But you know what? I really do believe in the right to block the streets, to protest, a peaceful protest. I have absolutely no problem with that. And I don't believe in the sort of way that the Chinese and many of these totalitarian countries around the world deal with it, which is just by rounding people up, locking them up and shooting them.
I agree, by the way.
They're making an important point, but they haven't thought through what the answers should be.
They shouldn't be locked up, and I certainly wouldn't bulldoze them or hose them off the streets. I jest when I say that. However, there is nothing peaceful about it when they're preventing people going about their daily business, number one, and when they're costing millions of pounds to ordinary businessmen and women. That's not peaceful. That's terrorism, it could be argued.
No, it isn't. No, it's not terrorism, that's for sure. Look,
it's eco-terrorism.
Just by forcing people to either sit in a traffic jam or find it's more difficult to get to work. You know what? For a lot of people, They don't care. They just turn up and they tell the boss, oh, it took me a bit longer today. In fact, some people might even have decided to have a bit of a break in the park, enjoy the sun, and turn up for late for work anyway, and say, oh, it was the XR protesters in the way, you know. So I don't buy that as terrorism. I just think that's the sort of thing you have to put up with in any free and democratic society. You know, it could be any kind of protest that's going on, and I wish it was a bit more of a protest against the war on terror generally.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And the security state, the police state that's being introduced, and the surveillance state, that sort of thing. I'd like to see a bit more of a protest against that.
But well, here's an argument for you. Here's an argument for you, my friend. A number of your followers and my followers are saying, well, hang on a second now, Gosling, they're saying on Twitter, yellow vest protests have been attempted in this country and they've been shut down violently with a complete news blackout, number one. And number two, there is a deep state agenda to push this climate hoax. CO2 is not driving climate on this planet. We are dirtying the planet. We are causing a loss of biodiversity. We are poisoning the oceans. There's no two ways about that. That's serious. But what these little middle class, little private school educated, I'm not going to continue because I'll start swearing. What they're saying is that CO2, we're all going to be dead in 50 years. It's nonsense, in my opinion. There's no evidence to support it. So what about the yellow vest protest to get shut down? And yet these kids can just do whatever they want. Yeah.
We've had some yellow vest protests in Somerset, not very well attended. It wasn't shut down violently or anything by the police. It was just not very well organised. Obviously, you know, we've got a lot to learn from the French. They're doing an amazing job. But there isn't such a powerful left-wing socialist kind of movement. You know why? That's because most of what used to be militant, the socialist workers, etc., has been infiltrated by MI5 very successfully. I think it was a book called Defending the Realm, which was about Annie Machon and David Shaler.
Yes.
Written by Mark Hollingsworth, I believe. And I remember my eyes popping out of my head reading that. They said they had something like 60 or 70 agents, counter-subversion agents, within MI5 that were within the Socialist Workers' Party. So the left in the UK has been thoroughly infiltrated. We know CND was thoroughly infiltrated, and that's the way they've closed it down. So they wait for groups to get together, to gather together for political pressure. They infiltrate them. They set people against each other. They create fissures in these groups, and then they close them down. That's basically the way they do it. So that's, I think, more concerning is the security state, really. And if people want to go out and protest against too many cars, which is effectively what they're doing, I mean, I don't really agree with them protesting at all against public transport. That just seems ridiculous. But I'm absolutely with them when they talk about too many private cars. I totally agree, because the whole transport system has been, it started with the Nazis with the autobahns. It went over to the United States with the freeways. The idea of the private car over public transport has been a fascist agenda, ultimately. And the idea is to just dismantle public infrastructure and make sure that the poor have got absolutely nothing in order to help them with their lives. You know, the bus service is being cut, overpriced, privatised, racketeered. And I totally agree that there's far too many cars. It's just a question of the solutions need to be proper, I think, socialist solutions where you've got a nationally run, accountable public transport that's got a decent amount of investment, like we used to have in the 1950s and 60s, and like Ken tried to do in the 1980s.
That's a brilliant way to leave it, mate. I could talk with you all day. I appreciate you coming on today. You're back on air this coming Friday, the Politics Show on BCFM. Massive scrutiny on the Politics Show.
I'll make one point, Richie, just quickly, finally.
You can, of course, go ahead.
I was going to say, by the way, at the Easter message from Lebanon, by the Lebanese leader Nasrallah, and I was amazed to find on Facebook, I couldn't post this, it was a Lebanese English language article about his Easter message condemning the attacks in Sri Lanka. And you know what? You can post a Kuwaiti fake news article about what he's supposed to have said but didn't say. You can also post a Jerusalem Post article about what he didn't say and was supposed to say, a complete lie, but you can't post the Lebanese article itself. So if anyone wants to go to my Facebook page or my Twitter feed, you'll find the original article in there, which is actually from Lebanon and from the Nasrallah group themselves, talking about what they are really up to in the Middle East. They're suggesting that the Israelis don't have the wherewithal to actually attack Lebanon, whereas the Kuwaiti articles that you can share on Facebook say that they're scared of an Israeli attack. So the complete opposite. So Facebook is being used in this way to just shut down entire national websites for the interests of the US, Britain and the Israelis.
And that's another massive topic for another day. It's huge. Thanks for bringing it up, mate. Great to be with you as always.
All right.
Thisweek.org.uk, The Politics Show, live on Friday. BCFM, Tony Gosling. Tony, thanks for coming on today, mate. I appreciate it. And happy St. George's Day to you, by the way.
Bless you, Richie. Thanks ever so much for having me on.
Cheers, mate. Always a pleasure. Tony Gosling, live on the line to us today from Bristol, The Politics Show, as I said, BCFM, every Friday. Go to thisweek.org.uk. Tony's got a brilliant website as well called bilderberg.org, and it is, I suppose, it's the go-to resource online if you want to learn about the Bilderberg group, the origin of Bilderberg, who's been at it over the years, who's been at it recently, what came out of it and all the rest of it. Very interesting stuff. 3 minutes past six it is on Tuesday, April 23rd, 2019. St. George's Day, big day yesterday in Manchester and in Birmingham and elsewhere around the country. Lovely photographs in the Manchester Evening News today of what seemed to be a very, very well attended parade there. And marvellous weather and bands and knights on horses and all the pageantry that you associate with a good parade. Yeah. Takes me back to Nottingham, as I said, 2010. I had nothing to do with the organisation of it, but I participated in the St. George's Day parade in Nottingham in 2010 because I came very close to buying a pub there, a public house that I was very fond of, and I was kind of in a try before you buy situation. And there were groups of people who came to the pub, and they were part of the St. George's Day Parade Committee. So they spent all year long planning lots of different events for St. George's Day. Lovely people, the best of people in the world, in Radford, in Nottingham. And then on the day itself, there's a big parade that goes through Nottingham City Centre, and it was great fun. I got involved on the day. Big barbecue afterwards and copious amounts of alcohol. It's not just St. Patrick's Day. The Sassenachs, they know how to drink too. Yes, it's not a competition. Sometimes feels like one though. Tommy Sheridan will be on the programme shortly. David tweets, I say there are jolly well too many of the great unwashed surf class on those bus thingy wingies. How dare they have anything but a cart and horse. What, says David. Yes. Bizarre that Kay Burley was speaking to one of these people today and saying, why are you shutting down electric trains? What's wrong with you? Kind of a thing, you know. Yeah, they don't know very much, these youngsters. Lana Lochtiff. I've been back in touch with Lana. She was due to be on the programme last week. And then there was a change of plan. And I was wondering whether she just decided not to come on. But it seems like I'm wrong. She is coming on next week. I'm really looking forward to that. Lana Lochtiff. Red Ice, of course. A lot of our listeners would know about Red Ice. She'll be on the programme with me next week. We'll have a good chat about these issues, about Brexit, about nationalism, about free speech, the media, and all the rest of it, the alt-rights. We'll have a good chat, Lana and I will, next week. She will be on the programme next week. Just in case you missed me saying it earlier on, I will be joined by G. Edward Griffin tomorrow. Ed is on the programme. He hasn't been with me for over a year. It's been a long time. I'm looking forward to that. Piers Corbyn on the show tomorrow to talk all things Extinction Rebellion. Yeah, Piers Corbyn will be on. Looking forward to that. Lots of people. Stephen Lendman will be back on the show later on this week as well. And I'll have one or two surprises for you as well. So I will. That's what I'll throw one or two surprises into the mix. The Richie Allen Show. Live from Manchester. Fab Radio 2. Triggerwarning.tv. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And my website as well. RichieAllen.co.uk. This is Prince. Sign of the Times. When I come back, Tommy Sheridan. Live from Glasgow. Sign of the Times by Prince on the Richie Allen Show. It's coming up for 10 minutes past 6. Welcome back to the programme. Massive interest, as always, in my next guest. Can't wait to speak with him. Lots going on at the moment. He's a Scottish socialist, former member of the Scottish Parliament. He's got a resume as long as your arm. I could tell you all about it. These days, he's a writer and broadcaster. Still, of course, hugely active in socialist politics in Scotland. We'll talk about that. You can read him regularly on sputniknews.com. And he's got some really interesting articles always. But this week, of huge interest to us, we're going to talk about IndyRef 2 and Scotland's future, inside or outside the European Union. Very important stuff, this. Let's welcome back to the programme the brilliant Tommy Sheridan, live from Glasgow. Tommy, always a pleasure. How are you?
Richie, I'm fine, brother. I'm fine. And I tell you, I'm very pleased to hear that you seem to be back on all four legs as well, because you were knocked for six a wee while ago, and I was worried about you. But you sound your usual combative self.
Oh, thanks very much, Tommy. Yeah, a bit of pneumonia back in February knocked me out for a few weeks, so I'm doing a lot better now, thanks. I think it was punishment for a couple of stories. I was leaning just a little bit to the right, I think. I think I was just getting kicked back into place. Hey, listen, can I start?
There's a socialist god after all.
There is, there's a socialist god. Can I ask you just briefly, I don't mean to be trying to surprise you now or anything, but I know you're a massive Celtic fan, and as a big fan of soccer myself, of football myself, growing up in Ireland, I'm a big Manchester United fan. Many of my friends back home, massive Celtic fans. What a great man Billy McNeil was, and I got to meet Billy many, many years ago in Spain, believe it or not. This genius of a footballer and manager that was the first man on these shores to lift the European Cup. I believe he was quite the guy, Tommy.
Richie, I'm actually in the middle of writing a tribute to him. For my Sputnik column, which will hopefully appear later tonight or tomorrow morning. I, like every single Celtic fan, and indeed any football fan across the world, was inspired by the example of Billy McNeil. Billy made record number of appearances for Glasgow Celtic. He had 822 appearances. He was also that very, very rare species, Richie, of being a one-club player.
Yeah.
Most of the players nowadays are a wee bit more mercenary and look for the money they can get out of the game. But Billy stuck with Glasgow Celtic from 1957 when he signed, to 1975 when he played his last game in the Scottish Cup final and led Celtic to a 2-1 victory over Airdrieonians. After that game, I remember seeing it. I wasn't at that game. I was at the 9-in-a-row game where we won the title for 9 seasons in a row, an incredible Scottish record at the time. But Billy lifted the cup, and then the players lifted Billy. Because that was his last game, and they paid tribute to the fact that he had been a tremendous leader. You know, much has been made recently, Richie, and it pisses people like me off up here in Scotland, because other commentators down south were going on and on and on about Manchester City going for the quintuple.
Yeah.
They were going to be the first club in Britain to win 4 competitions in the one season. And of course, it was a lot of bullshit, because Celtic in 1966-67 didn't just win 4 competitions. They won 5. They won all 5 that they entered. They won the League Cup, Scottish Cup, League, Glasgow Cup, and of course, the first British club ever to win the European Cup, all captained by Billy McNeil. So you're absolutely right to mention him, Richie. Billy McNeil was a living legend. He is now passed over, and if there is such a thing as heaven, then Peter will welcome him at the pearly gates, and he will immediately be handed the armband and the number 5 jersey, and he'll be in God's 11. There's no doubt about that.
Lovely tribute, Tommy. Just finally on that, this will intrigue some of our listeners in the United States. We've a pretty healthy listenership in America, on the East Coast of America particularly. Didn't the Lisbon Lions pretty much originate from all within or around a few miles of Glasgow? Is that right?
The Lisbon Lions, the nickname that was given to the Glasgow Celtic team that won the European Cup, the remarkable, remarkable thing is they all lived within a 30-mile radius of Glasgow. All lived within a 50-mile radius of Glasgow. Most of them within 5 miles of Glasgow, but some were from Ayrshire, Bobby Lennox, and therefore it was a 30-mile radius. Now imagine that in world football nowadays, Richie, where every club has a multitude of nationalities within it. Glasgow Celtic, 30-mile radius of Glasgow, every one of them Scotsman, and the first team, first British team to win the European Cup. Much is made, obviously, of Manchester United and the Busby Babes of 68, who went on to win the Cup, but Celtic were the first team to win it. Against, remember, the absolutely mighty Italian giants of Inter Milan. In those days, they were imperious, and Celtic went out and played them off the park.
And amazingly still...
By the way, sorry, Richard, just one more thing to mention. The 1967 European Cup final was played on May 25th, 1967, in the Estadio Nacional Stadium in Lisbon. The Scottish Cup final this year is getting played on May 25th, Celtic versus Hearts. Celtic will be going for another record, and that is a treble. They've won the double treble, they're now going for a treble. And I think, clearly, that cup final's got to be known as the Billy McNeil Cup final.
No doubt about it, Tommy. Thanks for that. That's lovely to hear that, as a one football man to another. Your piece on Scotland's future inside or outside the European Union is excellent. I don't say it's excellent because I agree with it. I'm not that shallow. I like a lot of things I read that, you know, would take contrary positions to the positions I hold. It's excellent, and it's got me thinking, do I get from your excellent piece in Sputnik News that there is a real debate raging on the left in Scotland about, well, if we do get independence, as we have the right to try for again, what do we do then? Do we stay in, do we stay out? It sounds like, or it rings through your piece that debate is raging now, Tommy. Is that right?
Richard, there is an ongoing debate within the independence movement, and I have to definitely, with caution, make this point. There are many, many major issues which are going to face an independent Scotland. Issues like, should we remain members of NATO?
Yeah.
Issues like, should we have a monarchy? Issues like, should we adopt a new currency? Issues like, should we be in the European Union? And all of those issues, Richie, are huge to me. I mean, they're important issues about the type of society we want to live in. Obviously, as a socialist, I want a modern democratic republic. I don't want any monarchy. I don't want to be a member of NATO. We're all united in our rejection of nuclear weapons, so yeah. Why would you be part of a nuclear alliance? It's just ridiculous. However, and this is the rub, this is the cautionary point, I think those questions, important as they are, will not be decided before independence. They will be decided after independence. And the truth of the matter is, we can fall out about these matters before independence. We can argue, debate, discuss. It is all hot air. Because until we get our independence, does it matter what Scotland thinks? Scotland voted, I mean, I didn't, but Scotland voted to stay in the European Union. Well, that has been ignored. Scotland's voted to reject nuclear weapons. That's been ignored. Scotland all the time is ignored in political terms. We've never voted for a Tory government since 1955, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And we've had about seven Tory governments. So from that point of view, Richie, although it's important that markers are laid down, I think it's important the SNP, which are the de facto leaders of the independence movement politically, they need to know that not everybody who supports independence is in love as much as the SNP appears to be with the European Union. Up until, by the way, Richie, a lot of your listeners might not know this, but up until the early 80s, the SNP was for withdrawal from the European Union. The SNP was not wanting to be a member of the European Union. Ironically, it was a guy called Jim Sellers, a left-wing leader of the SNP, deputy leader at the time, who led the charge for a slogan which became Independence in Europe, meaning members of the European Union. The reason it's ironic is because Jim Sellers is now one of the biggest critics of the European Union and thinks we should leave it. And the truth is, the European Union as a body gets a great PR as some cuddly toy that we should all be paying homage to. It is a very brutal and cold organisation that will stick up for big business and austerity all down the line. Whether it's Greece, whether it's Portugal, or recently in Italy, they will try and impose austerity budgets to impose cuts on services, privatisation of services. It is not a friend of the working man and the working woman. And what my article was meant to do was to say to people, hey, open your eyes. Don't just listen to the spin. You have to actually examine the substance of the European Union. It is a big business club.
I'm a socialist, and it drives me mad that being anti-European Union is somehow has been equated with being right-wing, or, you know, or being nasty and hating immigrants and all of that nonsense. So that drives me absolutely bloody mad. And I'm glad that you brought up, and I think we touched on this briefly in the past, that traditionally real socialists, and you're a real socialist, you're not a social democrat, which is a different thing entirely, but real socialists knew the damage that membership of the European Union would do for working people in working communities. Why do you think it is there's so many youngsters? I mean, you write brilliantly in your piece about the problems of the Italians in passing a budget. You know, you've talked about what it's done to Greece, the problems in Portugal, in Ireland, the rejection of the Lisbon Treaty. Why can't people see? It's a two-pronged question. Why can't ordinary folk like me see what the European Union does to other countries? Number one. And number two, why does Nicola Sturgeon promote alignment with the European Union when she patently must know that membership of the European Union is fundamentally anti-democratic?
Well, I think that taking your first point your second point first, Richie, I think Nicola is probably thinking that she wants to oppose the isolationist argument of the unionists. The big argument in 2014 of those who wanted to defend the British Union against Scottish independence was Scotland will become completely isolated as a nation. We won't be able to trade with other countries across the world. We won't be able to survive as an economic entity, and therefore we won't have a decent standard of life. And I think what the SNP are trying to say is, no, that's not the case. We'll still be part of the European Union. We'll still have links with the European Union, etc., etc. Now, I don't think she has to say that by saying staying in the European Union. She simply has to say that by saying, listen, we've got over 70% of the fishing and food exports of the whole of the UK. We've got over 80% of the oil reserves. We've got massive water reserves. We've got more than enough to survive on our own, trading with other countries with our own trading arrangements. We don't have to be frightened by European Union single markets, customs unions, etc., etc. We can develop our own path to trade with Europe and the rest of the world. Norway has a different path to those in the European Union. Norway isn't a member, but it still has a trading deal that allows it to pass its own budgets without interference by the European Union. I don't want the European Union to turn around to an independent Scotland and say you're going to double the pensions that you're paying your pensioners. You say you're going to introduce a realistic living wage that means that workers who are working don't have to claim benefits to make ends meet. Well, we think that's going to lead to too much of a deficit. It's going to go over the 3% debt to GDP ratio. Therefore, we're not allowing you to do it.
Yeah.
Not allowing us to do it. For goodness sakes, Richie, how dare a group of people, unelected, unaccountable, sitting in Brussels, turn around to any sovereign nation across Europe and say, see that budget that you fought for and you stood for election for? Well, we know the people voted for you to implement it. We're now not letting you implement it. That's no democracy, mate. That is utter nonsense. It has to be opposed and it has to be pointed out. That's totalitarianship. That was why people liked Tony Benn. For goodness sakes, Tony Benn is probably one of the best socialists that Britain's ever known. Certainly someone who would never be accused of being racist or being jingoistic or chauvinistic. Tony believed in humanity. Tony believed in welcoming people from all across the world to come and live and work in the British Isles. Tony Benn was implacably opposed to the European Union and believed that we should leave the European Union. Similarly, Bob Crowe, the RMT trade union leader, who was a very combative socialist, someone who you could never suggest was anything other than a left-winger. So there is a very rich, Richie, if you excuse the pun, yeah, there is a very rich vein of socialist opposition to the European Union. The sad thing is, mate, as you know and I know, the sad thing is the media only interested in the rational and socialist debate and argument against the European Union. They're much more interested in promoting racists like Nigel Farage and others like him, who want to blame immigrants for every problem in Britain, as if immigrants cause poverty, immigrants cause shortage of housing, immigrants cause shortages in the health service, when the truth is immigrants contribute more to society than they take out of society. That's just a fact. And you and me, you know, you've got an Irish accent, I've got Irish ancestors, we're bloody immigrants as well.
Yeah.
Scotland is a nation of immigrants, so I don't have a problem with immigration at all. What I have a problem with is businesses that don't pay their bloody taxes and billionaires who try and exploit the poor in order to become even richer.
Yeah, exotic tax shelters in far-flung corners of the earth, I agree with that. Now, he's not here to defend himself, and I'm certainly no supporter of his or of any other politician, but the aforementioned Mr. Farage would say, hang on a second, Tommy, I walked away from the UK Independence Party for the very reasons you've just outlined. I walked away from it because it was aligning itself with football hooligan thugs like Stephen Yaxley Lennon. So he might say, come on, you're being a bit harsh on me there.
But that isn't acceptable, is it? And I know the guy's not there, so it is always unfair to debate people when they're not there, Richie. But let's remember what attracted the Stephen Yaxleys and the others to the UKIP in the first place. It was Nigel Farage and his whistle-wolfing about the immigrants and immigration. It was his leading of the Brexit campaign, saying that everything will be better and rosy in the garden if only we could stop these nasty immigrants coming in. He made it an anti-immigration party. And then when he got out of control, you know, it's a bit like Shelley turning around and saying, oh, by the way, I don't like this Frankenstein that I've created. Please don't blame me. Well, I'm sorry, I need to blame you because you created it.
Fair enough. We've got tweets. Tommy Sheridan is our guest. You know Tommy, of course. He's a famous Scottish socialist, former MSP. Tommy writes for Sputnik News, which is terrific. Check it out. And we'll talk before we finish up this evening. We're not in any hurry. If you've got another 10, 15 minutes, if you can hang around with me, I'm delighted.
No problem, bro.
Great to have you around, Tommy. Tommy's going to be making podcasts. I want to hear about that. So we'll talk about that a bit later on. We're getting tweets. John Parsons tweets, now, Tommy, I'm a socialist, but I realise that open borders and free movement of cheap labour is incompatible with socialism. That's from John Parsons. That's a genuine tweet. I'm not one of these cowardly broadcasters, Tommy, that I can't say to you what I want to say to you, so I make up tweets. Some people do that. I don't want to take on Tommy Sheridan, so I'll make up tweets. This guy says open borders and free movement of cheap labour is not good.
But you see, I disagree with the fundamental point that John's making there. You see, free movement of cheap labour. I agree with him, we shouldn't have free movement of cheap labour. And the way to stop free movement of cheap labour is not to build bigger walls, it's to ensure that we have got minimum rights to proper living wages within our countries. You see, if Scotland, England and Wales had living wage minimums, which meant that employers could not exploit the building sites of each of those countries by recruiting Lithuanian or Polish joiners or bricklayers and paying them less wages and then blaming the immigrants rather than taking the blame themselves, if they couldn't do that because it would break the law, then we wouldn't have cheap labour imports because they wouldn't be allowed to pay workers any less. The workers that are getting recruited from other parts of Europe or indeed across the world would have to get paid proper living wages. Now, whether that would then be economic for companies to recruit those workers or not remains to be seen. But I've got to say to you, as I said earlier, as the someone who's from a family of immigrants, Richie, I do not want more walls. As the famous saying goes, when you have more and more wealth, you don't build walls, you build bigger tables. You build bigger tables so that people can sit together and share in the wealth. We don't have a problem of wealth in this society, Richie. The billionaires in Britain are earning more now than ever in their lifetimes. They've increased their wealth by something like $600 billion during the austerity decade. So we don't have a problem with the creation of wealth. What we have a problem with is the distribution of the wealth. That's what we have to tackle. And I hate it when ordinary people are manufactured and manipulated into attacking the people at the bottom of the tree instead of attacking those at the top of the tree. It's those at the top of the tree that are pissing themselves, laughing at the ordinary people fighting among themselves for the scraps.
Yeah, you're right. It pisses me off as well. I've been having this argument with people on the right and people on the left for years, decent people. I've been having it for years. I've been saying, who decided to lay waste to Libya, Afghanistan, Iraq and Syria? Who decided to do that? So you have millions of people, all of a sudden they're homeless, they've nowhere to go. Who decided to allow countries join the European Union and then allow those people travel in, those Eastern European people, again, decent working people, to come in and undercut wages? Who did that? Because the people in Syria, Lebanon, in Yemen, in Iraq, in all those places, they didn't manufacture the problem. And neither do the Eastern Europeans. Yes, their presence in some cases does represent a problem for you, but they didn't create it. They did not create it. They're not your enemy. And I don't know when we're going to figure this out, Tommy. People, I really don't. When people are going to wake up to this.
We have to, people like you and I, maybe read a bit more, and maybe we're more interested in some of these things. Maybe we study things a wee bit more. Not everybody has got the time or application. People are busy in their lives. People are just trying to make ends meet, and maybe they don't raise their eyes beyond the wood and look for the actual trees. The truth is, the immigrants who come to this country, and when I say this country, I mean Scotland, England and Wales, they are not the cause of poverty. Many of them are the victims of poverty. And as I keep saying to some of those on the right, if you want to stop people from the Middle East coming to try and live and work in Britain, then maybe you should stop supporting governments that bomb these people into smithereens.
Do you know what they would say? This is kind of segueing to, it's going in a different direction just briefly. This kills me as well. I've had this said to me by listeners. They've said, you know what, Richie? When they came around and campaigned before the last election, they said that, well, vote for us and we'll deliver Brexit. They said, vote for us and we'll lower your taxes. Do you know what they didn't say? They didn't say, Richie, vote for us and we'll give £1 billion worth of weapons for the Saudis to destroy Yemen with. That's what they'll say. It doesn't matter.
And
it's sick, isn't it? You know, here's
I mean, you look at the likes of Jeremy Corbyn, Richie, who is getting absolutely slated and slaughtered for pictures shaking hands with Gerry Adams or Martin McGuinness and encouraging, before the peace talks began, encouraging the idea of peace and reconciliation between Britain and Ireland. Why are we not slaughtering the likes of Theresa May and Jeremy Hunt for sitting down with the beheaders of Saudi Arabia and selling them billions of pounds of guns? Jeremy Hunt last month went to Germany to ask them to lift their arms embargo with Saudi Arabia. Not only is it bad enough that we're selling arms to Saudi Arabia to then launch against civilians in Yemen, but Jeremy Hunt is that angry, he goes and says to Germany, gonna you lift your embargo as well? He's a bloody snake. He's a disgrace, and so's Theresa May. And it's about time they were called out for their relations with terrorists. Because let's make no mistake about it, what Saudi Arabia is doing in Yemen is international war crimes, crimes against humanity.
I have a question for, I've been dying to ask you this since you first spoke to me a couple of years ago. I've been dying to ask you this. You've rubbed shoulders with the likes of these people in Scotland and elsewhere. You said it's sick that he goes to Germany to ask for the arms embargo lifted. It is sick. I wonder just how sick is it? Who are these people? I've been a journalist at every level, producing nationally, commercially. So I've, again, rubbed up against these people. And I understand that politicians, you know, are ambitious. People in general in that world are ambitious. They want to get on. Some people, because they want to do good. But a lot of them, because they want to better themselves. But even the ones who want to better themselves, you've got to think there's got to be some humanity there. Who are these people that will stand over the mass murder of hundreds of thousands of people in Yemen and go to bed at sleep and sleep at night? I'm not trying to make this all conspiracy theory program, but there's got to be something wrong with these people, Tommy. Fundamentally Richie, evil, are they? They must be sick, these people.
Richie, you and I, we tend to try and always look at the bigger picture. Sometimes, you know, small pictures are important, but the small picture sometimes doesn't make sense unless you add it up with all the other pictures. It's a bit like looking at a photograph rather than a video. You sometimes have to look at the video to make sense of the photograph. And the truth is, the world arms trade is, in my opinion, the biggest threat to humanity. We have got arms companies and arms dealers who used to make weapons to feed wars. They now make wars to feed the arms industry. But it's gone crazy completely. Every single resource that is devoted to the development, production of arms is stealing from the production of life support machines, is stealing from cancer research, is stealing from the production of hospitals and food ferry ships. It is taking away what is right in society and what is just in society. And personally, there are far too many politicians up to their necks in the blood of the arms industry. And Saudi Arabia, unfortunately, is the single biggest purchaser of weapons from the UK. I mean, incredible when you think about it. During the 5 years of the war in Yemen, Britain has sold £5,000 worth of weapons to Saudi Arabia to launch against citizens, unarmed citizens in Yemen. 60,000 children have died as a result of those weapons. Who made them? We made them. We should be ashamed of that, Richie.
Yeah, and you could say the UK is guilty as an accessory before the fact and an accessory after the fact. And yet, I don't imagine there'll be any phone calls from The Hague coming anytime soon to ask to speak to Theresa May. I've got another tweet for you before we talk about you doing some podcasts and broadcasting, which will be really interesting. This is from a Twitter account called Outsider Insight. He says, Richie, ask Tommy, who's going to bankroll his global welfare state and what bargaining power will we have if most manual and clerical jobs are being assigned to artificially intelligent robots? If we have no bargaining power, we will be slaves to technocrats. That's a good question, that. And I know you're aware of this. People are terrified about the rise of artificial intelligence, robots that can take even more jobs away. Who's going to bankroll the welfare state then? What do you think?
Richie, I think we've got to look at artificial intelligence the same way we look at all developments of technology. You know, we sometimes get caught up in the status quo and we think that these things get brought in and nothing else changes. We used to have visionaries in our movement who used to talk about technology freeing the working class. Instead of working 6 or 7 days a week, we'll be working 3 or 4 days a week. Instead of working 40 hours, we'll be working 30 hours. We've got a situation now where we see technology as a threat instead of a potential friend. If we control and develop technology properly, why should it be a threat? It goes back to the point I made about wealth. It's not the amount of wealth that's the problem, it's the distribution of the wealth that's the problem. It's not the technology that's the problem, it's who controls the technology that's the problem. And in relation to the Scottish situation, I think the Twitter may have been making some reference to what will happen in an independent Scotland. We have an abundance of natural wealth. We don't just have oil, which, quite frankly, we don't want to have to rely on much beyond the next couple of decades. But we have got potential to become the single biggest producer of clean energy in the whole of Europe. We've got 40% of all of Europe's potential clean energy resources in terms of wind, wave, solar power. We could become the powerhouse of clean energy here in Scotland. We've also got an abundance of land. We've got an abundance of food and alcohol and other drinks production. We have got the capacity to have a very, very wealthy economy. But you know what, Richie? Not if the land stays in the ownership of the tiny minority who currently have it. In order for Scotland to realise its potential, we're going to have to free the land and return it to the people. Similarly, in relation to technology, if we really want to utilise and use technology, Richie, then who controls it? We can't have the Googles of the world, the Amazons of the world. We can't have the big companies, the Facebooks of the world, who are controlling technology, controlling the production and the flow of information. We have to have socialised technology. You know, we've got a situation now. John Pilger makes this point all the time, and Noam Chomsky makes a point as well. It seems that we live in a world where all of the risks and the losses are socialised, but all of the riches and the profits are privatised. We need to turn that round. We need to take control of the wealth and the wealth-producing companies in order that they are used for the benefit of all instead of being used for the benefit of a tiny minority.
It's brilliant what you said there. Scotland has got all the resources in the world to sustain itself independently. And what people need to understand is that membership of the European Union is a way for massive corporations to get their tentacles around the natural assets of Scotland, as they have done to my country, Ireland. And that's where it's where I come in to the whole EU thing when I was broadcasting in Waterford many, many years ago. And, you know, at that time, we were getting a lot of young African migrants into Waterford City, into Tramore. It was coincidental with that Lisbon Treaty question. And people were saying to me, oh, have you got... I said, no, my problem with the European Union has got nothing to do with the African migrants from West Africa. It's to do with pilfering the natural wealth of the country. People have to understand that. You know what kills me, Tommy? Over the Easter Bank Holiday weekend, I've always loved Michael Collins. You know, I've got every book. I've read everything about the man. I'm shamelessly biased when it comes to that period of Irish history. I love Collins, and I think he must be turning in his grave that we can't pass a national budget without getting the say-so of the German finance minister. You know, the European...
Listen,
it's ridiculous.
As of tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken, Richie, then 103 years ago tomorrow, Irish Declaration was read out outside the GPO office.
Patrick Pearce,
and Collins and Connolly and others began a dream of a sovereign, independent nation that took its own decisions. And remember, some of the elements within that declaration, Richie, way before the time, votes for women, workers' control, real democracy. Well, I've got to say to you, mate, a lot of what the European Union stands for is usurping that sovereignty out of nations' rights to make their own decisions.
Can I ask you, just before we finish up, I do want to hear about the broadcasting. Why can't we as people, why can't we get away from whataboutery? You know, when I talk about the European Union, people, and I don't care because I'm not a snowflake, and I love debate and I love being contradicted, I don't mind it. But it's always, so you want to give the country over to Rees-Mogg and Bojo, and I'm like, no, when did I ever say that? I know what they'll do with the country. They'll give it to the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership Agreement. Don't stop with that nonsense. We have to get away from whataboutery, don't we? Get out of the European Union, then you hit the nail on the head earlier. Get out of the blasted thing, and then we can talk about the right way forward. But anyway, I'll give you the final word, and do tell us about podcast making, because this fascinates me. I'd love to listen to it.
Richie, I tell you, I'm going to disappoint you here, because I haven't developed the idea yet. What keeps happening, Richie, is I keep going on to other people's podcasts and I keep getting interviewed.
Life gets in the way.
People then say to me, Tommy, you should do that.
Yeah.
You should give your opinions. I remember you probably look at Mark, the taxi driver, on Twitter. He does a fantastic daily news report.
Yes, yeah.
Mark come up from London to interview me a couple of years ago during the referendum. And he says, you should really do this type of stuff, Tommy. And for years, people keep telling me to do it, Richie. And the truth is, I'm a bit of a technophobe. I'm not very good with technology. So I've always put it off and put it off and put it off. However, my union, the National Union Journalists, is putting on a course soon that is going to be about podcasting and how to do your own podcast.
Brilliant.
So I've enrolled to take part in that, and I'm hopefully therefore going to be in a position maybe in a couple of months' time to do a daily podcast. And it's basically to just try and get some opinions out there, Richie, which unfortunately aren't there.
Yeah.
I mean, I write with Sputnik and I try and put a left view out there and give people food for thought. Not everybody's going to agree with me, that's fine. As I keep saying to people, see, as long as we can have constructive debate and disagreement and engagement, then we will have the mother of progress. Because progress comes from constructive debate and discussion. It's the old Marx in me. You know, you have the thesis, you have the antithesis, and then you'll get to the synthesis. And it's always progress. It's always a way forward. What we can't have is destructive and denigrating debate, where you want to name call and you want to denigrate people. That's just no for me. If you want to disagree with me, fine, do it constructively. There's no need to fall out over a lot of debates. Obviously, if someone's an out and out racist or fascist, they don't need to fall out with me because I fell out with them. There's no doubt about that. But not everybody's going to agree with every dot and comma of what you say or what I say. And if they engage with us constructively, they might actually make points which makes us think. Because none of us has got a monopoly on wisdom. We're all learning every day.
Nor the truth, Tommy. By the way, driving a desk is actually easier than driving a car. That's not a joke. It won't be a barrier to you. I look forward to that. Folks, you can read Tommy on Sputnik News. Because I don't spend too much time on Twitter. It's usually the person who helps me, and he's pretty useless. I'm going to give him a kick in the arse. But I don't see tweets, and so I don't see messages. But I love reading Tommy Sheridan on SputnikNews.com. It's always challenging, thought-provoking, and he's excellently briefed, this Tommy. You know, you don't get too much of that in the media today. Sadly, columnists today are given 1,000 words. The beauty of what Tommy does is he can flesh an argument out over a couple of 1,000 words. It's excellent.
Yep.
I look forward to reading about Billy McNeil either tonight or tomorrow, Tommy.
I'm nearly finished it, Richie. I'm hopeful I'll get it over. Unfortunately, there's a wee bit of a process before it goes up on the website and Sputnik. It needs to go via Moscow, unfortunately. So it sometimes takes a wee while before it goes up, but it'll be up there. If not tonight, then certainly tomorrow.
Don't wait to be asked back, by the way. Come back real soon. Thanks for coming on today.
Brilliant, Richie. Great to hear from you, pal. All the best.
You too, Tommy. Bye for now. That was Tommy Sheridan, live on the line from his native Glasgow. I mentioned Billy McNeil there because we talked about Billy earlier on. I'm a big soccer man, a big football man, and Billy was a football legend. Even though I don't claim to be a Celtic fan, I've always been a Manchester United supporter, even as a very young boy in Waterford City in Ireland. But because of the Irish connection with Celtic, there are a lot of Celtic fans in Ireland, and in Waterford there's a very healthy supporters club, and some of my pals that I palled around with loved and still do love Celtic and travel to Glasgow once or twice a year to watch the matches. And Billy McNeil was part of that unbelievable Celtic team. And, you know, you might, Richie, why are you talking about sport? We don't do sport here. But the fascinating thing about that era of football players was these men didn't earn 200 times or 1,000 times the average wage. They didn't. Their wages were higher than the average working man or woman, but not that much higher. They didn't live in mansions. They didn't drive sports cars. And that Celtic team was the first team on this island to win the European Cup, which until then was dominated by Real Madrid and Benfica, but mostly by Real Madrid. And Celtic won it with a team, they beat Inter Milan in Lisbon, with a team where every man on the team was born within 30 miles of Glasgow. Can you imagine it? That's just, it's unthinkable today. You know, I'm not whinging now about the fact that, you know, we've got players from all over the world, from Africa, from the Far East, not at all, but to think that those players all came from Glasgow or the suburbs of Glasgow and dominated European football that year, it's an amazing thing. It's not a sectarian thing. I don't support Celtic. I don't, you know, have any time for, to be honest with you, I don't see a lot of Scottish football because I generally watch Premier League football. But that's why we talked about Billy McNeil. He was unwell for a time and he passed away earlier today, and there will be something about him because he was more than a footballer. That's the important point to make. He was more than a football player. Hi to Samantha Jordan. How you doing, Samantha? Richie, I enjoy listening to Tommy. He does speak a lot of sense, says Samantha. Thanks, Samantha. John tweets, even Winston Churchill had great admiration for Michael Collins, one of the world's great men. Rest in peace. Assassinated at Ballinum Law in Kirkuk, in County Cork, of course. William tweets, I am a big fan of Tommy. The man speaks a lot of sense. Here's to Scottish independence, he says. Hashtag, yes, we can. Independence must, of course, mean real independence. It must mean a Scotland that is independent of not only London, but independent of Brussels as well. Yeah. There you go. Shall we have a quick rundown? Just a quick, before we run out of time, a quick rundown of what's been making the news today. If you missed Tony Gosling earlier on, Tony was excellent talking about the attacks in Sri Lanka on Easter Sunday, which have killed 321 people and wounded 500. Ranil Wickremesinghe, who's the country's prime minister, is saying the attacks couldn't have been carried out without links to terror groups abroad. He's saying that, but the government is blaming a local Islamist group called National Tawhid Jamaat, NTJ. Fascinating listening to Tony Gosling there. Positing, there's a great word, positing, supposing, or putting forward the theory that it is a problem reaction solution thing to harden factions against one another, not just in Sri Lanka, but around the world. Christians against Muslims, a religious war as a pretext to looking at starting a conflict or starting the process of trying to remove the Iranian government in Tehran as one of the possibilities. Really interesting to hear Tony Gosling. It's not that I hadn't considered it, but I haven't been following that particular story much over the weekend, but fascinating to talk about that earlier on. Also talked, of course, about Northern Ireland and the death of the journalist in Northern Ireland over the weekend as well in Derry, and what might have been behind that and what might have led up to that. I'm talking about Lyra McKee, of course, the 29-year-old journalist who was shot over the weekend on Thursday. It was in fact on Thursday night. Now, what's interesting about that is that the new IRA is apparently claiming responsibility for it. But again, Tony Gosling, who is an expert really on the intelligence agencies of the UK, is asking the question, well, what is the new IRA? Who is it? What's driving it? Who's running it? And why would anybody? Why would he? He's asking, I'm not saying I am endorsing it and that I'm totally agreeing. I'm not saying that. But he's saying, why would any dissident Republican, why would you want to take a pot shot at a crowd of people at a group where there were journalists gathered? Why would you want to do that? What's the payoff? It's only going to bring a ton of bricks down on your own organisation and on your own head. Why would you do that? And that's a plausible question. And I don't know the answer to that. Deep state involvement, maybe. I don't know the answer to that. I couldn't rule it out. But the BBC, I know, the British Bullshit Corporation is reporting that the new IRA has taken responsibility. You know, whatever is the truth, a young woman went to work to report on the incident in Derry in that area and was killed for it. Dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. A lot of coverage of Greta Thunberg. I'm looking, she's been meeting with Ed Miliband, God love her, and that, what's her name? The Liberal Democrat woman. She's Alan as well, is she? With the glasses. I can't think of her name. This, it's been a long weekend. It's been a long weekend. She met with Caroline Lucas of the Greens. She met with Vince Cable. And I can't think of that woman, that Lib Dem woman. I can't think of her name. It's just escaped me. Greta Thunberg, who came from nowhere to be meeting everybody in the world to tell us all that if we don't reverse our CO2 emissions, we're all dead. Danny tweets, Richie, were you not praising Mr. Sterling for his response the other night? I was. That's Raheem Sterling. Yes. Black football players shouldn't leave the pitch because a half a dozen yahoos, motherless dickheads, are making monkey noises at them. Those guys are proper arseholes. And I guarantee you there will be a number of other guys standing behind them saying, if you don't stop doing that, we're going to kick the living shit out of you. We police ourselves, right? So I love that a obviously intelligent, articulate young man who happens to be a brilliant footballer says, don't walk off the pitch. Ignore them. Beat them. Laugh at them and collect your massive paycheck. You know, why not? You know, don't leave the pitch. Don't walk away. Faisal tweets and then we'll wrap it up. Faisal says, I know many Sri Lankan Muslims and they are most closely intermarried with Christians more than any of the majority ethnic groups there. They would never be involved in this, says Faisal. Thanks, Faisal. Tony Gosling definitely takes that point. I don't mean Caroline Lucas. No, the other one. The Lib Dem, they're saying she's going to take over from Cable. The Lib Dem. She's got glasses, long hair, big shiny pearly teeth. I can't think of her name. It's been a long weekend. Listen, look after yourselves and one another, right? Join me tomorrow, right? Because I will have G. Edward Griffin on and I will have Piers Corbyn. Thanks to Tommy Sheridan and Tony Gosling. I've been Richie Allen. It's great to be back. See you tomorrow. This is Morrissey. Love this.
There's gonna be some trouble.